Good evening. This is Life Rattle, the Story Show. I'm your host, Lori Callis. On tonight's program, Life Rattle number 1286, we feature two new stories by Life Rattle writer Sarah Peters. Sarah Peters was born in 1992. She grew up in London, Ontario, with five brothers, one sister, three and a half parents, and a cat. After high school, she moved to the Big Smoke to pursue her studies at university. In her spare time, Sarah writes plays, and walks around expensive home decor stores, thinking about how she would decorate her home if she weren't a poor student. Sarah Peters is thankful for cheap wine, good jokes, and Joni Mitchell. Sarah Peters is a beautiful writer. She is a master of the character study. Her prose, with distinct dialogue and carefully chosen details, creates individuals you would recognize on the street. In tonight's first story, we meet a very talented university student who excels at every endeavor, but has yet to find her raison d'être. Let's listen now as Sarah Peters reads her story, Imogen, tonight on Life Rattle.
Imogen by Sarah Peters. Imogen, her name came from the little-known Shakespearean play, Cymbeline. Her parents were both actors and drama teachers in our hometown of London, Ontario. Imogen and I met at Lester B. Pearson's School for the Arts. Our friendship blossomed in grade 4, but waned after we were split into two different classes. We rekindled our friendship in grade 12 vocal class. We studied classical voice with the same teacher, Frances. Imogen's voice snatched the hearts, soothed the ears, and begged the tears of listeners. After vocal recitals, parents, friends, and family members of other singers would bombard her with praise. In my first year of university, I shared a room with Imogen. Kitchen appliances crowded the front entrance, and the door to the bathroom stood next to it. Other than that, we just had our room. Imogen had been one of the 15 people accepted into one of the most prestigious programs at the University of Toronto. The vocal performance program's criteria for admission were so demanding that many didn't make the cut. I was placed in a residence filled with students in the music program. Trumpets blared, flutes chimed, clarinets hummed, and voices chanted as I strolled down the long hallway to the laundry room. In my room, Imogen harmonized with a Joni Mitchell song as she washed the dishes. One day, Lee came over to visit. "Hey, Imogen, what'd you get on the sight singing test?" she asked. Lee lived on the fifth floor. Her curly hair bounced on her shoulders as she walked. She wore high heels to class. "I don't know," Imogen said. 88 or something?" "Shit!" Lee waited for Imogen to reciprocate the question, but it never came. Imogen never cared about grades. "I only got a 60. I practiced 20 hours this week. Shit." "Wanna watch Degrassi?" Imogen asked. She watched television shows for several hours a day on her laptop. She would lay on her bed in her blue, flower-speckled muumuu and peruse Facebook on one half of the screen while she watched Degrassi, Sherlock, Dexter, or one of her other favorite TV shows on the other. She liked Degrassi best because she knew two of the actors on the show. "No, I can't," Lee says. "We have the paper due tomorrow. I've been really stuck, so I met with the prof today. I have to rework my conclusion. How's yours coming?" "I haven't started," Imogen says. She sang along to Joni. "Oh, you're in my blood like holy wine. You taste so bitter and so sweet." Imogen never started her work until the night before the due date. She watched TV until midnight, and then made herself a cup of orange pekoe and some Mr. Noodles. She flicked on her desk lamp, and the sounds of her keyboard would send me into sleep on the other side of the room. Sometimes, when I woke up in the morning, Imogen would still be slumped over her computer, her index fingers poking furiously at the keys. "Did you sleep at all?" I asked. "No, I'll nap today." Imogen hustled into the bathroom after me and grabbed her industrial-sized baby powder. She sprinkled it into her hair to absorb its grease. Imogen wore her muumuu and tan Birkenstocks to class. The shapeless dress skimmed 1 inch above the ground as she walked. One day, my girlfriend Hannah came over for an afternoon. "Can I have something to drink, Sarah?" she asked. She lounged on the pilled, cream-colored couch that divided the room. "Yeah, sure," I answered. I pried open the door to my silver mini-fridge, wedged in between the foot of my desk and my bed. "I've got orange juice, water, tea, milk, and vodka." "Vodka," she smirked. "Great." I handed over a 26er of Smirnoff Ice. She twisted the lid off and took a sip. "Ugh, gross. Just kidding. Quick, get me some orange juice or something." Imogen twisted around in the chair at her desk. She had been playing Facebook Sims for the past 3 hours. "We drinking now?" she said. Before we could say anything, Imogen yanked the drawer in her desk open and took out a sample-sized bottle of whiskey. The cap cracked as she twisted it off. "Bottoms up!" She held the bottle in the air and downed the amber liquid. Fits of laughter pealed from Hannah and me. Without a word, Imogen turned back to her Sims game. Imogen and I had sociology together, Imogen's one elective subject. She attended sometimes, but would fall asleep about 10 minutes in. I went to most lectures and pored over notes before tests. Imogen flicked on her desk lamp at midnight and read the 200 pages worth of readings the night before. I always ended up with a 79%. Imogen, 80. One day I asked her, "Do you ever wonder what would happen if you applied yourself?" "Well, sometimes. But then I think about how much I would miss out on other things." "Good point." I turned back to my work. Imogen turned back to Degrassi. Halfway through the year, Imogen and Lee wanted to lose weight. Lee stopped by a few times a week, and they would leave to the Hart House gym to work out. I heard a knock on my door one Wednesday night. I opened the door and saw Lee leaned against the doorframe. She wore black tights and a black t-shirt. Her water bottle dripped with beads of condensation. "Come in," I say. Lee walked through the kitchen to Imogen's side of the room. I followed. The familiar smell of chicken nuggets seeped out from the oven. "Hey, let's go, girl," she said. Imogen perched on the edge of her bed in black tights and an oversized t-shirt with a faded Mozart face on it. "I think I'm going to have to pass. I just got to this really great part of the book." Imogen had been ripping through the Hunger Games trilogy all week. "But you're dressed already. Just come on. It's only an hour," Lee whined. "Yeah, but here's the thing." Imogen tilted her head. "I could go there for an hour, but all I'll want to be doing is sitting here with a tea and some nugs and reading. So I might as well just do that now." "Good point," Lee sighed. She went to the gym alone that night. She went to the gym alone most nights after that. In my second year, I transferred to U of T's Mississauga campus to work as a don in residence. The downtown campus didn't allow second years to work as a don. I often visited friends in Toronto. I went to visit Imogen in her new apartment near Queen Street West. She moved in with two of our friends, Christine and Christine. Their apartment consisted of 3 bedrooms, a bathroom, and a kitchen with a dining table jammed up against the wall. Imogen painted her room gray and blue. Her mattress lay on the floor below 50 small vintage posters plastered on the wall that she had meticulously cut from a book the year before. An oversized lamp glowed from the corner of the room. She'd taped a cutout picture of Josh Groban under the lampshade so that the light bulb illuminated his face. A plush, burgundy lounge chair hugged the far corner. A modest wooden desk leaned against the wall next to the chair. Joni Mitchell blared from the plastic-cased record player at the foot of her bed. "So, how's school? How are your classes?" I asked as I toured her room. "It's all right. I'm dropping out of music, though." A Margaret Atwood novel tumbled off the stack of books on her desk. "Ow!" The book landed with a thud against the carpet. "Just kidding. It didn't land on me. I thought it might have, so I said it just in case." I laughed. "Why are you dropping out of music?" I asked. Imogen sat cross-legged on her bed and reached for her glass of Girls' Night Out rosé. She wore her blue flower-speckled muumuu. A red bandana held back her bangs. "Well, I just don't belong. Everyone in my program goes to class in high heels and a dress. I get out of bed 5 minutes before class and never change out of my muumuu. I'm just a classic 20-year-old. I eat chicken wings and smoke pot and chill with my friends and drink wine and watch TV," Imogen said. "But I can't do that in my program. I love music more than anything. But I hate how everyone else works so hard. It makes me feel guilty for not working, you know?" "But you get such good marks," I said, "and you don't even need to work. And you're so talented." "But the passion for classical voice isn't there. What's the point?" "So what are you switching into?" "Sexual diversity studies. I start next year." Imogen hummed along to Joni and the conversation fell as we let the lyrics wash over us. "I hate you some, I hate you some, and I love you some. I love you when I forget about me." A tear landed on the pillow below her. "Are you upset about it?" I asked. "Huh?" Imogen's eyes opened. "Are you upset about it?" "No," she replied. "The music, it's so beautiful. Can't you hear it?" I smiled and watched as Imogen sipped her wine, closed her eyes, and swayed to the rhythm. The bittersweet sounds of Joni filled the room. "I am on a lonely road, and I am traveling, looking for the key to set me free."
That was Imogen, written and read by Sarah Peters. Sarah delivers another exceptional character study in tonight's second story, of a mother with three young children who has a surprisingly complex encounter with her babysitter. Let's listen now as Sarah Peters reads her story, Perfect.
Perfect by Sarah Peters. Sarah, I hear my name screamed three times from the dining room as I stand in the doorway and stare at Lisa. "Come on," she says. "The kids have been asking about you all day. Darla calls you Babysitter Sarah now. Cute, eh?" "Aw, that's adorable," I say. I'm surprised she can say the word babysitter. She's a smarty pants. I slide across the dark wooden floor, pry open a set of French doors, and see three faces with big smiles around a cherry wood dining table. Thomas and Emily sit across from each other and pick at their dinner. Darla wiggles in her high chair in the corner. The smell of roast chicken, Parmesan cheese, and roasted garlic greets me. "Okay, time for a vote." Lisa enters and closes the dining room doors behind me. She holds up an oversized lavender shoulder bag and a small white handbag. "Which bag should I take to the party tonight?" "I like your normal one better, 'cause those ones are kind of dirty-looking," Emily offers. Her 9-year-old frame takes up only half of the dark wooden dining chair. A cream-colored apron wraps around her waist over a violet and peach dress. Her hair falls over her shoulders in two tight braids. A Little House on the Prairie novel rests beside her dinner plate. "It's not about what looks best this time, Emily. I have to pick one that will go with the theme. It's a 60s party." Lisa taps the table with her manicured nails. She makes her way around the table, stops behind Thomas, and smooths the cowlick in his fire-red hair. "Thomas's teacher asked me today if he could skip senior kindergarten next year and go straight to grade 1. Do you know how many kids get social anxiety from that? No, thank you, she laughs. Thomas stares at his plate. His eyes remain fixed on his peas as he shapes them into a smiley face with his fork. Mama, cries Darla, wriggling in her high chair. Sarah, what is your opinion? Emily turns to me and points at the bags Lisa had placed on the table. I don't like either of them. They would both be great. Maybe the purple, though. It seems more of the time period. I glance over at 2-year-old Darla, cramming a piece of cheese up her nose. A foul smell hits me like a baseball bat to the face. Hey, Darla! I swing around and meet her bottle-green eyes. Remnants of dinner cover her face. Let's wipe your face and change your diaper, okay? No, I know poopy. She wiggles in her high chair. I can hear the squishing. All right, you two, Lisa says to Thomas and Emily. Finish your milk, wash your hands and face, and brush your teeth, please. Emily, Thomas, and Darla tilt their glasses to their lips, drain the last drop of milk, and hop off their chairs to scurry upstairs to their own private washrooms. Lisa turns to me. You can let Darla out and she'll wipe her face in the washroom. Then you can change her diaper. The kids have to go to bed early tonight because Darla has music with Mom tomorrow. Thomas has ballet and Emily has piano. They already had cheese with lunch, but other than that, you can give them anything for a snack. Sounds good, I say. I heard you started babysitting for Angelica. Lisa walks to the front hall closet and I follow. She yanks open the door and rummages for a pair of heels. Yeah, I babysat them last weekend. And? I'm not sure yet. The baby cries a lot. She's at that age where kids get separation anxiety, you know? I'm not a fan of Angelica, Lisa says over the rustling of shoes. No? I return to the dining table and peel the lid off the high chair, unsnap the belt, and lift Darla out of the seat. She waddles into her bathroom. I don't know, Lisa shouts. I mean, she's friends with Lola, so I can't really say anything to her about it. But she's so, well, she's just very fake. She'll rant and rave about the benefits of organic food to everyone. But just the other day, Lola saw her take her kids to McDonald's. Lisa zips up a pair of high-heeled brown boots. I see. A faint smile crosses my lips. Well, I certainly wouldn't be caught taking these kids to McDonald's. Lisa rises up, walks to the door, and jiggles the brass knob. Keys jingle in her hand. If you need anything else, you know my number. The party's just down the street, so if there are any big problems, I'll be close by. Okay, thanks. I look down and see Darla sitting on the bottom step. Her hair has come undone. Elastics cling to a few strands. Does Mom get a kiss before I go? Darla leaps up and embraces Lisa. Thomas, returning from the washroom, stumbles over and flops his body onto his mom's legs. A small voice rings out from the top of the stairs. Don't forget about me! Emily bounds down the stairs and leaps into her mother's arms. Never, Lisa whispers into her ear. I was just about to call you down, silly bean. The children wrap themselves around Lisa, plant kisses on her blush-covered cheeks, and say their goodbyes. Lisa kisses their foreheads. She slips out the door, and we stand and watch her strut down the lane until she becomes a speck in the distance. Thomas reaches up to the brass handle and turns the bolt lock. Let's play fairies, Emily says, and holds out her skirt and twirls. I have to change Darla. Want to come upstairs with me? And then we can decide what we're going to do once we're up there. Sure. Can we read a story, too? Thomas asks. He climbs the stairs on all fours. His hands thud against the cream-colored carpet with each step. The clock on the microwave that hangs above the stove reads 2:24 a.m. My eyelids feel heavy. My contacts stick to my eyes like cling wrap. I lounge in a brown leather chair with my feet tucked under me. A book rests on my lap. Emily, Thomas, and Darla have been in bed for 5 hours. The dishwasher has been unloaded and reloaded, the toys from our adventures in Fairyland put away, and the main floor swept. A rustle comes from the garage door. The sound of keys clanging against the door handle echoes through the whole house. 2 minutes later, the door opens with a thud. "Hello!" Lisa sings. She stands on the landing at the bottom of the stairs in front of the garage door. She holds her lavender bag, heels, and an empty bottle of wine. "Hi, Lisa!" I stand at the top of the staircase and wedge the book under my arm. "Sarah," she says, and looks up at me. A deep purple stains her teeth. Her eyes focus on planting her feet on each step as she climbs the stairs. "Yes," I answer. "How did it go with the kids?" "It was great," I smile. "We played Fairyland. I read a story with Thomas. They had grapes and warm milk for a snack at 7 and watched Franklin until bedtime." Lisa rattles and paws and then kicks the baby gate. "Help!" She whines and pouts at me. I unhook the latch and swing open the gate. Lisa hurls herself forward and falls onto the area rug. Her head narrowly misses the granite countertop of the island that separates the kitchen and den. "Are you okay?" I ask. I kneel beside her. "Me? Oh, yeah. I'm what you call perfect." I chuckle. "You know what, Sarah? I used to really be perfect. I mean, not me. My life. It was perfect. Before all this... Before my kids, and big fancy house, and cars, and husband. Where is my husband anyway? On a business trip. He's always on those business trips. I was really, truly happy. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love my kids. I'm happy now. It's different." I tiptoe to the kitchen cupboard, grab a glass, and fill it with cool water. I place it down beside Lisa and take a seat on the orange and brown rug. "I see," I say. "I was free. Did you know that when I was your age, I ran away to England?" "No." "Well, it's true. And then I fell in love and came back to Canada, and then all this happened." Her arms flail in a sloppy, sweeping motion as she looks at her surroundings. "You know what, though? You know what? I think you're perfect. I look at you all the time and I say to myself, I think to myself, wow, this girl is really perfect. Did you know that?" Lisa pokes me on the knee. "No." I laugh and wipe my wet hands on my ripped jeans. "Should I call myself a cab then?" I crawl to the cupboard, grab the phone book, and scan the yellow pages for a cab company. "Yeah, I think I'll just even maybe stay here on the carpet for the night. Mike's out on business, you know." "I know," I stifle a laugh. "I suppose I ought to pay you." She groans and snorts out a laugh, rolls over to get up, then flops back down onto her belly. I stare into her eyes, unfocused and red. "That's okay. You can just pay me next weekend." I take a blanket and pillow from the sofa in the living room. As I dial the number for a taxi on my cell phone, I drape the blanket over Lisa. "If you lift your head, I can put a pillow under it." "No," she says. I should go to my bed. I can't have the kids see me like this in the morning. Don't worry about the mess. Our cleaners are coming tomorrow morning." I blush. "Okay, I'll help you," I say. I call the cab and lead Lisa upstairs to her bed. Classical music drifts down the hall from Emily and Thomas's bedrooms. Before I put on my coat, boots, and hat, I slip into the living room, pick up my things, and clean up the mess.
That was Sarah Peters reading her story, Perfect. This concludes Life Rattle number 1286. My name is Lori Callis. I recorded Sarah reading her stories. Life Rattle was created by Guy Allen and Arnie Achtman. Be sure to tune in next Thursday to hear more new stories by two new writers.